Robert Seaborn, Maine. Hail. The sound is oddly comforting and ominous. Second time this week this has happened. The sky just opened up and I take it for a sign. It's been a strange week, and it started kind of like this, with me sitting in the car just outside of this crap joint, staring at the door with bleary eyes. The burned-out bulb and the neon green sign couldn't pull my attention. Neither could the old man in cowboy boots puking into a rowboat. I sat transfixed, watching the man in the gray hoodie. He stood on the porch, just staring off at nothing, like he probably had at the start of the week, like he probably had every time he found himself on this porch. It's just a sense I get. The wind didn't faze him, and he almost seemed to like the hail. I wanted to approach, but I waited. I needed to make sure I timed it right. I don't remember if I pulled the 32 before or after the man in the gray hoodie walked outside, but I found it in my lap at that moment. My breath stuck to the windshield. The man on the porch, seemingly done with nature's evening performance, removed his apron and re-entered Tans, which, in more prosperous times, had been Stans. The guy in the gray hoodie would have parked behind the restaurant. If he had a car, which he surely did, he'd go back there, hopefully alone. I just needed to wait for the drunks at the dock. When they finished puking, I planned on strolling to the trash cans near the back porch. I'd wait outside, despite the hail, and I'd end this. I guess I hadn't been sleeping well since last Saturday or the night before it happened. I drove up the coast from North Carolina and I found this little seaside retreat. Quaint, cozy, the perfect spot to retire for a little while, get my shit together, which is why I took the sabbatical. Since we've been separated, well, my job had forced me to take some unpaid vacation time after an incident, an outburst. I don't know which sounds better. They both sound bad. I checked into the room at this cheap B&B not too far from the water and found the crab joint just before calling it a night. That's when it happened. It only lasted a moment. I sat down, ordered a beer, got the crab special, and I put my napkin on my lap, and then I saw him staring at me from the front door. I looked right back at him. We both froze. My waitress dropped my beer off, and I might have tossed a glance as she walked away. And when I looked back, the doorway was vacant. I told myself that I was just exhausted, but I couldn't sleep that night. Everything seemed a little too real. I thought about going back the next day, but I went out on the water instead. Chartered a boat with a couple of strangers to do some deep sea fishing. I hadn't fished since I was a kid. This was my first time back. I ruminated out on the water, but I still couldn't shake the uneasy feeling from the night before. I couldn't catch anything. I was shit with my hands and out of practice. When I got back to the B&B, I pulled up a seat at the common table. The owner said something about chowder that morning. Outside, the rain turned to hail, and the wind picked up, slammed the wooden shutters. An older woman, very hospitable of a little odd, brought out the soup, piping hot. Just lifted a bite when I found myself staring at the base of the stairs. Again, I looked at my mirror image, in different attire, with a haunted expression. We waited, transfixed. I sprung up, spilled the stew on the driftwood table, and the stranger climbed the stairs at an alarming rate. I would have been quicker after him, but I smacked my knee on the table and hit it just right. Everything kind of stopped for a second. When I reached the top landing, all I saw was an empty hallway. Dim sconce lights ran the length. At the far side, hail clinked against the lone window. I rubbed my eyes. The drunks finally finished puking and drifted to their car. One of them fumbled around in his pockets. Must have been looking for his keys. Then they bumped into each other. Looked like it was going to be a confrontation. Probably exchanged some heated words based on the gestures. Then they started walking down the gravel road. Might have been for the best. They looked pretty far gone. Not that I cared. I pocketed the 32 and braved the hail. The little stones in the front parking lot made a crunching sound as I walked to Tans. Just then, the tea went out. I checked out of the bed and breakfast the day after I abandoned my chowder for the chase. Checked into a motel. Spend a little time in the downtown area, which my wife, when we were still together, she would have called it charming or so cute. If she had been there, we probably wouldn't have talked much. probably be a whole lot of silence, maybe a little shouting before we went our separate ways to different endeavors. I was glad she wasn't there. I liked the sea air, and I'd enjoy it alone. This little nook reminded me of where I grew up. That was something. Maybe closest thing to comfort that I'd known in years. Near dusk, I popped into a bar in town. They'd decorated it like a 19th century ship. Grabbed a drink, tried to catch a game. I had a TV in my new room, but being around people made me feel a little less miserable, less alone. I just about finished my second beer, and I happened to toss a glance at the port side window, with a bubble at the bottom, and I thought I saw my reflection. It was the damnedest thing. I looked wet, but I felt dry, not even damp. I took the last swig, and my reflection trotted down the street. I shot off my stool and nearly broke the front door down when the barkeep shouted something at me. I fumbled back, pulled a wad of bills from my pocket, and dropped them on the bar. When I finally made it through the front door, the street was barren, except for a couple in rain slicks walking toward me. They ignored the puddles. They were blissfully unaware of any bullshittery. I yanked the curtains closed when I made it to my motel, and I just sat on my bed for a little bit, real quiet. I eventually turned the TV on, watched the local news. A lot of shitty weather in the forecast. Must have nodded off in the early AM because the tapping on the window surprised the fuck out of me. Flung open my luggage, my one suitcase, rummaged around for my gun, but then I remembered that I left it in the glove compartment. So I grabbed a bottle, I waited, and waited. Dawn came before I peeked through those curtains. Nothing. I zipped up my jacket and walked between the trash cans by the back porch of Anne's. I stood there for a minute, crouched beside the porch, and then thought better of it and went back between the trash cans and crouched down. At least the hail was letting up. Or maybe the improvised shelter was providing a little relief. I rubbed my eyes because they were tired as shit. Was this crazy? My ex would think so, but something in my gut hadn't felt right since I'd crossed over state lines. I could hear the ocean crashing against the boats on the other side of the building, and I shut my eyes for a second. Maybe a couple of seconds. I traded in the bottle for the gun in the glove compartment after my sleepless night in my motel room. I thought about going to the police, but I didn't know what to say. That I'm being followed? That the man looks exactly like me? Maybe that wasn't the strangest thing they'd ever hear, but I'm pretty sure it would sound peculiar at the very least in such a small town. I was a drifter or an out-of-towner, so I had that going against me. They wouldn't care since a crime hadn't been committed. They might pull up my record and, well, it was better not going to the police. I drove to the beach just to sit, think. I was trying to clear my head on this trip, but every day I had felt worse, more confused. I thought maybe I just needed sleep. I was hungry, but I was more exhausted, so I passed on more fresh seafood and drove back to my motel. Shit. I parked. The door to my room was open. A few of my shirts were sprawled over the entryway. I threw the car in reverse and stormed into the main office. I told the clerk, "My room is open." The manager, this little old man, tilted his head with his confused expression. I told him again that my door is wide open, asked him who the fuck has been in my room. His confusion turned to fear. Tried to tell me that no one had been there, it was just me, I was the only one. That I had put up a do not disturb sign. That I had asked for a spare key that morning and then left. The thing was, I hadn't asked for a spare key. I must have looked stupid. I didn't respond, just walked out with an unpaid bill. Left my suitcase, which was just a bunch of shit clothes that my wife gave me last Christmas. I sprinted to the car and I drove off. I drove for hours, not in circles, but I didn't have a destination. I couldn't really leave. I needed to know. I needed to know if what I was seeing was real or some kind of trick or joke. No, this didn't feel like a joke. Someone had it out for me. While I was driving, my mind drifted back to the first time I'd seen him, an enigma in the crab joint, standing in the entryway so still. He was holding an apron. He was holding a goddamn apron. If he had an apron, he probably worked there. I went back to the restaurant that night, conducted a sort of stakeout. I watched the happy families with their happy children bouncing along in their happy fairy tale lives. I watched the out-of-towners, the townies, the bikers, all of them. I didn't see myself, though. I arrived at the start of the night shift and stayed after they closed. Fuck. Maybe I was losing it. Maybe I did need therapy, some kind of medication like my ex kept telling me. Then it hit me, and the insecurity washed away. Maybe that son of a bitch just wasn't working tonight. I drove around the next day, kept moving, stayed alert, made sure I was unpredictable. I gassed up a few times, stopped for snacks, drinks. I didn't even bother throwing anything away. I didn't want it traced back to me. Then I found myself back outside of Tan's that night, just as the sun set. A few hours later, the hail started coming down hard. I opened my eyes. These trash cans smelled foul. Probably all the seafood, the discarded shells, the buttered meat, the tartar sauce gone sour. I could smell it even in the deluge. As I was shifting around my weight, lights clicked on in the distance. Headlights. Then I heard an engine. I perked up a little. Maybe this car would go ahead and leave so that I could do what I came here to do. The next thing I knew, I was pinned between the back wall of Ann's and the gory bumper of a truck. A classic. The old fish from the trash cans exploded all over me, and bits of me got pushed out the back. The lights shined right in my eyes. So bright. I flung open the door of the truck and I raced over to him. Asked him who the fuck he was. He tried to respond, but the only thing that came out of his mouth was a spray of blood. I asked him why the fuck he was following me. It looked exactly like me. This was too fucking bizarre. He pulled his hand from his jacket, and the light bounced off a barrel. Shit. I darted back to the driver's side of the truck and threw my hand on the gas pedal. The truck jumped forward, and I heard a distinct crack. I wasn't sure if it was his spine or the foundation, but I wasn't about to stick around to find out. I walked back around and surveyed the damage. Then I remembered how homicide was frowned upon, especially in towns like this. Even if this fucker could have been my doppelganger. Time to keep moving, I guess. I reached into the part of his coat that I could still get to. No luck. I grabbed the gun, that's a bonus. I rooted around in the one pants pocket I could get to. Thank God. I walked to one of the two cars still in the parking lot and put the keys in the door, crossing my fingers. It swung right open. I scanned the radio and came across some classical music. Calming. I drove off, left the smoking ruin in my wake. As I headed down the winding road, I passed by two shadows along the trees. I thought for a moment, put the car in park, then I reversed back to that odd sight. As I approached, I could hear singing. I stopped and rolled down the window. You boys need a lift?
Shit, yeah.
That's what they said. The two drunks hobbled into the back seat. We were going to have a nice, long drive. Jason Goodall, Munster, Indiana. I like to play games. I thoroughly enjoy them. Even this is a sort of game. You should enjoy this one too, as you listen from your car, on your drive to work, on your trip out of state, in your earbuds, jogging, sitting and waiting. We'll start with a sort of call and response. I call, you respond. Subtly, at first, maybe you cringe. Noticeable, discernible to those around you. But the real response comes later, when you interact, when you try to connect, but nothing's the same. First, the rules. You can only look people in the eye. You can't blink until they blink. You have to laugh a little louder than you should at whatever joke they make, whatever funny thing they try to say. Hug a little too hard, shake a little too long. Final rule, when you leave, when you part ways, you have to make a gun with your finger and your thumb, and click your tongue as you walk away. Points if they do a double take or laugh uncontrollably. When did we start to play? I know I began my game alone. We always start alone, despite what we think. I was walking down the street, October 98. Someone was having a garage sale. I walked through their yard, fucked up their grass, it had rained the night before. They wouldn't care, they were moving, and I had never met them anyhow, and I didn't care now. I looked through their shit. You can see a life story play out if you get to a garage sale early enough. Windows of time on the tables. 5 years on display. 10, 20, maybe more if their parents just died and they were hoarders. Then you were opening up a time capsule. I perused, I didn't need the VHSs or the Rooster paraphernalia. They had some old board games, though. The typical trappings. Monopoly, Life, Sorry, Tedious Fair. I'm sorry if those are your favorite games. I'm not sorry for saying it, just sorry for you. For your life and the choices you've made or failed to make. The games we play reflect our choices, and maybe the fact that I took any interest at all in boxed-up games says something about my choices up to that point. But all my choices, all my preconceptions, were about to change. Amidst the shit, I came across an old wooden box. More of a crate, really. The lid of the box had carved symbols, which I didn't recognize, and very faint printed images, what might have been a bear, a lion, some sort of bird ones. Intrigued, I popped the box open. The contents were in immaculate condition. Maybe 40 paper cards, a soft sort, with small text that almost looked handwritten. Maybe 100 gray tokens, again with some sort of symbols engraved. All these little clay chips looked different too, like the same symbol, but unique. Then I came across the final component to the game. Maybe a dozen or so maps, all topographical, no price tag. An old lady sat behind a folding table wearing a fanny pack and sipping some sort of tea. I asked her how much for the game, and she said something I didn't quite understand. English must have been her second language, or maybe her third. I tried handing her a five. She shook her head. I pulled out another five. This must be some kind of antique. She stared at me for a long while, put her glasses on, leaned over the table, and glared into my eyes. I pushed the money forward. She finally accepted it. When she went to grab the bills, though, she took my hand in hers, held it for a moment, and she just kept staring. I thought I saw a film over her eyes, maybe the start of cataracts. My mom had them, too. She finally let go of my hand, and I walked to the comics and card shop in town. I was meeting a few friends there, and this would be a nice distraction from our typical routine. They were late, as usual, and I chatted with a shop owner for a few, a divorced guy in his 30s. No kids. He'd lived here his whole life, well, near town anyway. I found a little table in the corner of the shop and started poring over the rules. I could make out a little of what was written with a great amount of effort. The writing was tiny, intricate, a little faded, and the syntax was odd, almost broken English with odd words inserted randomly. The shop owner was building a deck on the glass counter. I thought about bugging him, but then thought better of it. If he started talking, he'd never shut up. The rules were unlike anything I'd ever read. They started with a strange, congratulations, not for the purchase of the game, but just like in general, for being alive, and the accomplishments and the accolades that were sure to follow. The setup for the game was a little daunting, too, not just because of the overwhelming number of steps, but also because some of the game components were not included. Not that they were missing because of the passage of time, but I doubt that certain elements were ever even packaged. This whole thing felt like it might be a bit much given the requirements, but the artwork and attention to detail was so stunning. Maybe it was more mysterious than stunning. 30 minutes late, then 45, then an hour. My friends must be getting high, or maybe they got grounded, stuck with chores. I didn't want to spend all day alone with the shop owner who I could tell was itching for conversation, so I packed up and walked home. When I passed by the garage sale, it had been picked clean and all the tables had been packed up. The only thing that remained from just a few hours ago was my set of footprints in the mud and the for sale sign. Must have been a rush on their junk. I found Dad asleep on the couch, football playing soundlessly on the TV. Mom was at some church function. I went upstairs to my room to pore over the game for a little while longer, grabbed a soda on my way. I ignored the do not enter sign and cleared a space on my floor, kicking a pile of dirty clothes under the bed. These rules were weird as hell. I thought about calling my friends, seeing if they wanted to come over to try and make sense of them, but maybe given the level of complexity, I should finish reading through the materials first. I didn't have anything else to do for the rest of the night and wasn't particularly interested in going to school fresh the next day, so I set about starting to play. I poured myself a hot drink. I made tea with a bag in the microwave. I had never made tea, but this was part of the game. On the second card after the congratulations, I drank it, hated it. I wrote down the necessary elements per the game introduction, which I knew would be destroyed early on in the game. I wrote down the first thing I remembered. I wrote down the thing that I loved the most. I wrote down the worst thing that I had ever done, a little subjective even in my own head. I wrote down my brightest hope, that's the game's wording, brightest. And then I wrote down how I thought the world would end. The rules said that you had to fold the piece of paper into the shape of a little animal, I guess it wanted origami. I did my best, but it was a pitiful attempt. I ended up with a little cat or cat-like creature, and then I continued. I put the little animal into a charred dish inside of the game box, and then I took out the gray tokens. I transferred them to a secret location. You're not supposed to say where they're hidden. I would have divided them up had there been more players. I pulled out the maps and spread them out over the bed. The rules hadn't said to do this yet, but I was preparing, making more space. Hum the first song you remember. Eurythmics. Little embarrassing, or it would have been had anyone been listening. Ah, shit. I hadn't found matches yet. I went back downstairs to the kitchen. Father was awake now, smoking. He said, hey. I said, hey. That was our conversation. Then I went back upstairs with the matches in hand, finished humming the song, moved one gray token from the hiding place to the game box, then lit the origami cat on fire. It burned quickly with a puff of gray smoke. I felt a little weird, maybe because I hadn't eaten all day, maybe because of the oxygen depletion in my small bedroom. That was stupid, though. A candle wouldn't have had any effect in my room. Why would this little fire? Then everything went cloudy. It seemed like the little charred container was putting off a lot more smoke for its contents, but I was having trouble even remembering what the contents were or what was on that paper. Why did I light it on fire? My mom walked in about that time. Asked what the hell I was doing. Told her I was playing a game. She replied, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, as was her custom. She was always shrill when she was upset, or when she was afraid, or when she didn't understand something, which was often. I complied, and I put the lid on the box back on top, which extinguished the flame. She asked me what I was playing with. Told her it's a game. She asked for more details. I told her it's a board game. She told me no more fires in the house. I tried to explain that we had candles and asked her what her thoughts were on those. She left. She'd had a few shopping bags with her. Must have been a productive day by her standards. She loved to shop. It was her one talent. She would brag about how good at shopping she was, which she didn't realize was maybe the stupidest thing to brag about. I took the lid off the box and the paper turned to ash. I reread the introductory rules which I had just followed, the parameters for the questions I had presumably answered on the sheet of paper, but I couldn't, for the life of me, remember some of the things that I'd written down. I couldn't remember the first thing I had remembered. It was just a fog. I was in a little bit of a slump. Maybe from seeing her, maybe because I spent the day alone. Maybe it was the single light in my messy room. I don't know what it was, but I guess I felt resentful. Everything felt pretty bleak. I read the next rules card. Jesus. I wasn't able to start the next step for 2 days. 2 literal days. I'm glad that I didn't rope my friends into this. I went to clear the bed to pack up the maps, and I noticed for the first time, they kind of looked like islands. I don't know how I missed that before. I tidied to grab some cold rice from the fridge and retreated to my room to watch TV. I guess I crashed in the early AM. When I woke up, I found the game box on my nightstand. I didn't remember setting it there. Shit. I looked at it sideways. Maybe the carvings were characters? At least one of them looked familiar, like some sort of language. What a weird game. Got ready for school, caught the bus, same old bullshit. Boring classes, met up with my friends at lunch. They had gotten grounded the day before, and they had been smoking. I was right. 2 for 2. They walked me through the entire ordeal about how they had almost heroically escaped discovery, but how the cat had given them away. I started to tell them about the game when the bell rang. 3 more periods, more boring shit, a long bus ride home, a short walk up the street to my house. This was weird. My dad's car was in the driveway. He must have come home early from work. Both my parents sat on the couch awaiting my arrival. They told me to sit when I got inside. I could tell my mother had been crying. I asked her what happened, and she said, I want you to be honest with us. I knew this could go a number of different ways. And then she started to speak again. She told me that she was going through a drive-thru. She had looked in her purse this morning. And then I knew that this was the worst way this could go. She said that she could have sworn there had been $20 in her wallet yesterday. I let her know that she probably spent it. She had gone shopping, and she let me know that she had paid with a card, and then she asked me if I took the money. I stayed silent for a little too long. I thought about denying it, but I thought that honesty might right this sinking ship. I confessed. She tried to fight back the tears, and then my dad asked me if this is the first time I had stolen from them. I told them they'd given me money before, and he just glared at me. I said that this was the first time I had stolen, and I knew this was going to go sideways. My mom talked about how the money had been missing from her wallet, from the nightstand, from the emergency can, that she thought it was just negligence, but then she realized that I had been lying to them for months. I tried to apologize, but my father just sent me to my room. told me how disappointed he was in me. That was like a knife going right into my belly and sliding. I strode silently to my room, fighting back the tears until I closed the door. And I just laid out on the bed. This was the worst, maybe the worst thing I had ever done. An hour passed, and then another. No one came upstairs, but I awaited my punishment, which was surely being devised. The phone rang a little bit before 9. It kept on ringing, and someone downstairs finally answered. Then there was a soft knock on the door. My dad said that it was for me. I wiped off my tears, expecting my father to enter, but he didn't. I picked up the phone, and it was my friend from school. "Holy shit," I whispered aloud as he talked at 60 miles a minute. He'd heard from his brother who had seen it happen. Kelly Lauder, the girl that I had had a crush on since the third grade that I wanted to marry, or at least bang exclusively for the past several years and would once I got up the nerve to talk to her, had gotten into a car with Tricia LeClaire. They'd pulled out of the school parking lot and were driving to the downtown area. They'd just left the four-way stop, but someone must have missed the sign or ignored it and T-boned them. They'd gone to the hospital. His brother had heard that Tricia was in critical condition and he was going to the hospital right now, but apparently Kelly died when she arrived. Or just before she arrived. That's what he heard, that she was dead. My dream girl was gone. I didn't cry. I didn't know how to process it. I just had to do something. A distraction. I absentmindedly pulled the game off the nightstand. I laid the maps out again. The instructions. I continued reading. Holy shit. I reread the introductory rules. Again. And again. When your first memory fades to nothing, return a token to the chest. A little further down, when your worst crime comes to light, return a token to the chest. Further down, when your hope dissolves to ash, return a token to the chest. What the fuck? This didn't make any sense. The timing of these occurrences was odd, but there was no way these things were related. Just coincidence. I continued reading. I read ahead. I read tomorrow's tasks. I continued to the rules for the day following, and the month after that, and the next. The rules for 1 year and 7 months later, for 6 years later. And finally, I finished reading all the rules, maybe around 3 a.m. Then I realized that I didn't have a choice but to continue playing. The reward was too great not to play, even with the cost. The consequences of stopping were brutal. I fell asleep with the rules in hand, the maps at my feet, which had not been mentioned in the rules at all. At school the next day, I singled out a kid that I had bitten on the playground years ago. I hadn't talked to him since. I told him I talked through what I cherished in him. He almost socked me. That's how disputes were handled on his side of the tracks. Literally, he lived just beside the old depot. Then, I asked for his mercy. He thought better of hitting me and instead just gave me a good shove, had a laugh at my expense, and returned to his buddies relating the weird fucking thing that had just happened. The lunch table that day buzzed with news of Kelly's death. Trish had pulled through. It looked like she was going to make it. I listened half-heartedly as I bit into a slice of cafeteria cheese pizza. I hurled as soon as the cheese touched my tongue. Revulsion rippled across our corner of the cafeteria. Great. No more cheese pizza. This was fucking embarrassing. I jogged to the restroom and tried to clean my shirt. I didn't know if I should go to the nurse and try to go home early, but then I'd have to explain to my parents what had happened, and they hadn't talked to me since yesterday. So I just toughed it out. On the bus, I kept my forehead glued to the window, looking out, remembering just how everything was. The blur of grass, yellow leaves, the dog chasing his ball. When I shuffled to the top of the stairs, I again ignored the sign posted on the door, and I again opened the box. I took 2 gray tokens from their hiding place and returned them to the chest. I carefully reviewed the rules. I flipped open my pocket knife. I pricked my thumb and smudged a droplet of blood on the inside of the lid. This was going to be a hell of a lot of fun, even with everything horrible that was about to happen. But I tried not to think about it. I started my game over 10 years ago. I've since learned that the carvings on the outside of the box are Japanese characters. But I'm not allowed to divulge their meaning. You'll have to decipher that when the time comes. Since I began playing, I've been accepted to an Ivy League school. I found a collection of rare coins that was worth 5 figures. My mother has passed, and I've totaled 3 cars. Much, much more has happened, but I don't want to spoil all the surprises. And now, as I sit in this little quiet place, I'm twirling a lock of hair that belonged to a descendant of a survivor of Nagasaki, and I'm speaking to you. I'm giving you a few rules to follow that you need to follow. Don't blink until they blink. Hug a little too hard. Shake hands a little too long. Laugh a little too loud at the joke that isn't funny. And when you make a gun with your finger and thumb, click your tongue as you walk away. Are you ready to play?